This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, gbncom.com.
I'm Ryan Macklin from Master Plan. Many have tried to read it, but the wisest know to listen to the tome.
Welcome to the Tome, episode 24, and I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. The Tome is a D&D news and review podcast, and in this episode, I will be ducking the flames of Tiamat with Dragons of Faerun. Welcome again to episode 24 of the Tome, Dragons of Faerun. As of today, the Tome Summer 2007 contest is over! That's right, the submissions have been verified, the entries have been made, the dice have been randomly rolled to determine the winners, and those winners are, in first place, Chris Engler! In second place, Ben Livingood! And in third place, Ethan Parker. Congratulations to you guys. Thanks a ton for participating to all of you out there. I will be getting in contact with those winners shortly about what selections they wish to take from the prizes and where I should send them to. And look for a summer 2008 tome contest coming next year. Although stay tuned, I've actually had a company contact me wishing to sponsor another contest this fall. So keep your ears perked about that. So now I have all these submissions. I need to be making a bunch of website updates. I've got some audio comment and review submissions that I need to finish up and get out there for you. I've got three more interviews that I've done but haven't released to you guys yet. I've got a lot of stuff for the Tome to get to you guys, and I'm really looking forward to getting it out there and having you guys enjoy it. Now, I've mentioned before, I'm thinking about doing some format changes for the show. And I'm thinking that that would start probably after 25. That's the next episode. So, what I want from you guys is to hop on over to the forums and let me know what sort of format changes you might like to see. The forums can be reached from the website. That's www.thetomeshow.com, all one word. Then click on forums. Hop over there. I've got a couple of different options in mind. I'd like to hear some feedback from you guys. I've gotten a little bit of feedback through email from this. So really, let me know what you're thinking, and I'm looking forward to seeing what we can do to make this show even better for you. I'm going to fly right past D&D news this time and include it next time. I've got a few little things to share with you. But I'm going to save it for next time in an effort to get this out quickly. And the next episode won't take me long to put together because it is an interview episode. In fact, I will be interviewing Eitan Bernstein, one of the authors of the book that I'm reviewing today, Dragons of Faerun. Now, I know we've been waiting a long time on this Dragons of Faerun review. I mentioned it ages ago, and then I thought to put it off and do it in the same episode as the interview, because this was the first interview that I'd sort of lined up. Not the first one that I did, but the first one that I sort of organized. Then I decided that I didn't want to make it really, really, really long, like an hour and a half to 2 hours. So I decided instead to release it as two episodes. And so here we are, back to where we were at square one, and I could have released the review months ago when I had the book finished and ready to go for you. But in the meantime, before we get into that review, let's let you hear a word from another podcast that I've been really enjoying. More and more, I've started getting back into writing, which I haven't done in a long time, and this podcast has helped inspire me and helped me focus my writing and think about my writing. So here's a quick promo from the I Should Be Writing podcast.
The following takes place between It Was a Dark and Stormy Night and What Would Happen Next, Only Time Will Tell. This is Bauer.
Jack, this is CTU. Where are you? We need you in the field.
I can't. I am in the middle of a severe plot twist.
Jack, what are you talking about?
What I am talking about is my daily word count, my goals in character development, and my possibilities in getting published.
Jack, your country needs you. You should be in the field.
No, I should be writing. Just like Myra Lafferty tells me on her podcast. She gives writing tips, personal anecdotes, and even features published authors in interviews. It's a totally Airwolf podcast.
Jack, you can't be...
Hold on. My position has been compromised. Repeat, my position has been compromised.
We'll send back...
No! Send me an editor!
Jack, you're pinned down. You should be returning fire.
No! I should be listening to Myra's podcast! I should be writing! Time is short. Subscribe to Myra Lafferty's I Should Be Writing at ishouldbewriting.com. Your life and the fate of the free world may depend on it.
Okay, so we are back, and today I am looking at Dragons of Faerun by Eric L. Boyd and Eitan Bernstein, who you'll get to hear more from in the next episode. And this is a Forgotten Realms Wizards of the Coast book, and it focuses all on dragons in the Forgotten Realms, which you could probably figure out from the name. Now, the introduction goes into sort of where the information from this book fits in well. In the Forgotten Realms sort of canon, in the novels and in the supplements and things that have been out recently, there's been a lot of major events that have been explained, specifically revolving around the Year of Rogue Dragons. That's 1373 DR, for those of you who are Realms fans. And so this sort of gives you the information that you need to run the Forgotten Realms in the world after that massive event that heavily involved dragons, of course. And it also incorporates some other items and some other books, but it gives you some really cool information about running dragons in a modern Forgotten Realms campaign. Now, is there information out there for you if you're not a Forgotten Realms person? Or is there information in here for you if you're not running a Forgotten Realms campaign that's set in the most modern year of canon? That's what we're going to see as we go through this. The first chapter is called The True Dragons of the World. And basically, they give you a quick history of dragonkind way, 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 way back when the Forgotten Realms was first created or what have you. Dragons ruled the world. And then there was an overthrow to get rid of the dragons. The elves banded together who were previously slaves. They used magic to create something called the Draco Rage Mythal, that whenever this special star flew through the sky, the dragons would go into a horrible blood rage and just tear up their own kingdoms at that point. And then there were these series of wars. The Cult of the Dragon eventually shows up after Samaster, a common villain of the Forgotten Realms, showed up and decided that undead dragons were going to eventually rule the world, and he was going to help that happen. Then Tiamat comes in and starts getting involved. There's this whole thing with Tiamat and Bahamut down in the area of the Forgotten Realms known as Unther. They deal a lot with that kind of stuff down there. The dragon Tiamat comes in and slays some of the gods, and that continues to be a really interesting period of time. And so eventually Tiamat is gotten rid of, and then Tiamat comes back, and then the Time of Troubles happens, and so you have gods walking the earth, and several of the gods were destroyed, including Tiamat. Then you have some dragon-based things happening further north in Damara, where Gareth Dragonsbane, the current and king of Damara, goes through his great and well-known adventures and is rewarded by Bahamut with a tree that he's planted in his realm, and it keeps out all kinds of horrible evil demons and evil dragons and that kind of stuff. And so there's a realm down in the south, Unther, which is heavily connected to Tiamat, and there's a realm up in the north, Damara, which is heavily connected to Bahamut. And then you enter the Year of Rogue Dragons, this most recent event, where a rage of dragons occurred, only usually the rage of dragons was only around during the time of that King Killer star flying through the sky. This one, however, seemed different in that it wasn't going away. And I'm not going to spoil the Year of Rogue Dragons novels for you, and I did do a review of them a while back, so if you want more information on those, go back to that episode. But basically, this is a big event, and the dragons tear up the Forgotten Realms all over the place, and eventually the Rage is ended, and so now we're up to the modern history and trying to figure out, okay, now what happens? There's fewer dragons in the world, and they've just torn up a lot of the world, and so the humanoids of the Forgotten Realms don't really trust the dragons anymore, even the good ones. And then we get into a different section dealing with what kind of role can dragons play in your game. And so this is a section that you can pull some ideas out of this just, you know, page and a half section for any game, really, of ways that you might integrate dragons into your game. Now, honestly, there's probably better books to do it if you're not running a Forgotten Realms game. And then it gets into the section of this chapter that takes up, honestly, a big, big chunk of this book. And that's the section on true dragons. This is the section of the book where it actually literally gives you details, statistics, and lots of information about major players that are dragons in the Forgotten Realms. Okay, so we have, for example, the first one is a long name that I'm not going to try to pronounce, but the nickname is Gildenfire, which is a neutral male old gold dragon. Which, first of all, is unique because gold dragons are usually good, not neutral. And second of all, is unique because not only is this an old gold dragon, but it's also an 11th level druid, making it a CR26 dragon. For each of these dragons, you get information, some background information about who these dragons are. You get some information about their horde, specific items in their horde that might be important. You get some information about their lair, the different kind of tactics they might use in a fight, some of their known allies, some of their known enemies, different schemes that they have going on, some things that you might learn about those dragons using different knowledge checks, some adventure hooks that tie into these dragons, and then a little section on what was going on with that dragon during the Rage of Dragons. In some cases, like in the one after that, which is the nickname of this dragon is Defender of the Pit, a lawful evil male fiendish juvenile green dragon. You get all that same information, and a full stat block for all of them, of course. I'll take that back. A stat block for some of the more unique ones. Otherwise, you get referenced information about where to find a stat block that's pretty close, and all you have to do is apply the necessary templates. So, I guess you don't get stat blocks for all of the dragons, but you do for a lot of them. But in any case, what makes this one unique, though, is that you don't get the stat block, but you do get an actual full-color detailed map of this dragon's lair. And as much as it would be awesome to go through each and every one of these, I think it would just take a long, long time. To be honest, as I was reading this book, reading the information about each and every individual dragon took forever. I mean, it got, honestly, a little bit long, a little bit tedious. They're really cool, it's just, it's dragon after dragon after dragon after dragon after dragon. Some ones of note that I thought were interesting, though. Old Gnawbone, a neutral evil female ancient green dragon, I thought was interesting. She is a CR28 dragon, and I found her interesting because she's connected to Waterdeep, but because of a mythal that's over Waterdeep, she's not actually allowed to go into the city. And so she sort of keeps watch on what's going on in Waterdeep from the outside using a series of light crystal balls and scrying devices to sort of watch Waterdeep and gathers information and then uses that to manipulate things. So I found that one interesting. In fact, there's several dealing with Waterdeep. The next one is actually also very interesting. It's a blue dragon, great worm blue dragon called Sharp Fangs. And the reason I found this one interesting is because it's highly connected to the history of a part of the Forgotten Realms that I haven't dealt with a lot. And so I found that to be really cool. And that area is the area of Soon, or Shun. And you get a lot of, it includes a lot of the sort of history of the Shun Imperium, which is this ancient empire that I didn't know much about. And the history of that empire being ruled, actually, by this dragon throughout different parts of history, and then being later ruled by Shun the Seventh and Shun whatever. It goes through these various rulers named Shun, but also intermixed in there was this dragon who ruled and now has and then disappeared and now has come back and has decided maybe they want to be in charge again. So I found that to be interesting. Another interesting dragon of note is Nartheling, Master of the Mountain, a chaotic neutral male ancient fang dragon, who I found to be interesting because I know for a fact that Nartheling is mentioned in a different book in the Forgotten Realms, but you don't get a lot of information. You get some sort of hints that Nartheling might be doing this and might be doing that and could end up with this and that and the other thing, but this gives you more information about it. Nartheling was originally mentioned in the Aglarond book, in the Aglarond section of the Unapproachable East book, I should say. And so now I actually ran a campaign in Aglarond and thought, hey, it'd be kind of neat to run some adventures encountering this Fang dragon, but I didn't know much about him. Now this book gives me a lot of neat information about him and how apparently he's got this little war going on with beholders up in his mountain, and I had no idea from reading the previous book, and so that was a really cool bit of information for me. Skipping ahead a bit again here now, you hit one of the, probably the most powerful dragon in the book, and one of the more interesting dragons in the book that comes up again and again and again later on, and that's Chazar. Chazar is a chaotic, evil, male, fiendish, great worm red dragon. But not just that, is also a 12th level dragon ascendant, making him a CR 40 creature. That's a toughie, to say the least. The reason that Chazar is integral to the Forgotten Realms is that Chazar used to be the ruler of the country of Jacinta, and actually created the realm of Jacinta, and now is back, is the chosen of Tiamat, helped bring Tiamat back to life, and is interested in reestablishing his ancient empire. Now, obviously there's some people around that don't want to see that happen, including a great worm blue dragon that lives in the area that is actively fighting against him, although doing it from the shadows a bit because he knows that he's a weaker dragon. So there's some really interesting possibilities with Chazar, especially if you're going to have a higher level campaign, or if you're going to have a low level campaign in Jacinta or in that area of Southern Faerun, and eventually work them up to a higher level where they might actually start challenging Chazar. Then you get into a section called Worms of the North, where instead of giving you that thick, detailed information about all that stuff, instead you get just little blurbs about different dragons that live in the northern parts of the Forgotten Realms. The reason they don't list them is because, in more detail, is because there was a series of articles written in Dragon Magazine called Worms of the North, written by Ed Greenwood himself, the creator of the realms. They show up in issues number 230 to 259, and they're in Dragon Magazine Annual number 3. But you don't need to go hunting them down, because you can also find this information and actually some other really, really cool web enhancements on the Wizards of the Coast website at wizards.com/DND, D in the letter D. And so you can find all this information in a lot more detail there. And so, and actually, I would suggest anybody who's interested in running something draconic in the realms, hop over there, because there are some very, very cool web enhancements for the Dragons of Faerun supplement that I'm looking at here. And I will link to that area in the show notes. Then you get into the undead true dragons. So you have a whole other section that's set up identically to the other section, only this time you're looking at Dracoliches. And the first one is the Great Bone Worm. This is the Great Worm Blue Dragon that is actively fighting against Chazar that I mentioned previously. And so you get a handful of five or six of those Dracoliches that are known to be out in the realms, and so you get some things that you can integrate that way. Chapter 2, then, is all about the Cult of the Dragon. The Cult of the Dragon is a organization created by Samaster, a guy who used to be one of the Chosen of Mistra, then went a little nutty, and decided that he translated a certain prophecy as being that undead dragons will rule the world. And he was going to help them do that. It's been fairly thoroughly established that, in fact, his translation was a mistake, but he stuck with it for a long, long time. And so he goes through some of the history of the cult. He's gathered more and more people around him that sort of support his idea of bringing undead dragons to rule the country or the world. And these are the people that are running around making Dracoliches. The dragons didn't figure out how to make themselves into liches. Samaster did, and he has been spending a lot of time running around trying to convince dragons to become Dracoliches. Gives all kinds of information about the organization and about the people that are now in charge. Due to the recent events, Samaster is no longer in charge of this organization. And so there's new people in charge, and actually kind of a split in the organization. It's sort of divided itself now into three different groups following three different leaders, and they all sort of compete for power here. In fact, one of them is one of the dragons listed in the book in the previous chapter, is one of the leaders now running the organization. It gets into a section detailing the different cells of the organization, different parts of the world where you might run into a powerful group here. Symbius stood out to me as being a place where there's a powerful cell, I guess I should say, of the Cult of the Dragon. And that one stands out to me because that's an area that doesn't generally deal a lot with dragons in the Forgotten Realms, and it's a well-established trading empire, merchant empire. And so the idea of throwing in this cult that worships undead dragons and creates them there seems like an interesting thing for me. And then you get a section on the followers of the Scaly Way, which deals with what do people do when they're members of this organization? What are the roles of clerics? What are the roles of dracoliches? What are the roles of creatures that have dragon blood in them? Dragonkin, dragons themselves, necromancers, sorcerers, how do they all specifically fit into this organization? And then it deals a little bit with magic that the cult uses and some of the different items and spells that they might have access to that other organizations or other magic users may not be able to get access to. And then it gets into a little mini adventure. It actually gives you a little adventure called the Cliffs of Karthot. And it is for 4 to 6 ninth level characters, and it's all an adventure dealing with the Cult of the Dragon. And it deals with a location called the Well of Dragons, and the cult has a powerful cell located there that I hadn't mentioned but was listed previously. And it involves the players taking a boat to a lighthouse where the occult cell is very active, and there's this large underground complex. And so then the players are expected to sort of walk through this lighthouse slash dungeon complex and get rid of the cult and clean them out of the area from stop them from doing whatever horrible evil things they may be doing. And it gets obviously a little more complex than that, and looks like a decent little side adventure that you might run. You're not going to build a campaign off of this little mini adventure, but it looks like it's a decently made little location adventure, basically. There's not, you know, go from place to place to place or anything like that. And then the next section, chapter 3, is called Tyranny of the Dragon Queen. And this section deals with Unther. Unther being the region that has previously had a huge impact with Tiamat and has a long history with Tiamat, having come in and killed off some of their native gods. Unther has had a bit of an issue lately. And the issue is that Unther, down in southern Faerun, is occupied, or most of it's occupied. Most of Unther is being occupied by another kingdom called Mulhorand. For those of you who aren't aware, Mulhorand is the area of the Forgotten Realms that is based on ancient Egypt. Unther is the area that's based on ancient Mesopotamia. But sitting right next to Unther, you also have Chasinta, which is being ruled by Chazar, a chosen of Tiamat, and Threskel, the area being ruled by the Bone Worm, the undead Great Worm Blue Dragon, who doesn't like Chazar. And so it gives you all kinds of information about that area and how you might run that area. It gives you a history of Unther. It gives you all kinds of like a normal sort of stat block, I guess, for Threskel, that area. So you get your population and your government and all that kind of stuff. Some regional history. And then you get into some history with the Church of Tiamat and what that organization is like. The Church of Tiamat has this really interesting on and off relationship. In some areas it's welcomed, in some areas it's not. In some areas it's powerful, even though it's not in the open. And so you have this sort of, depending on where you're at in the southern Faerun, you have this odd little temple or church of Tiamat that is either extremely, extremely powerful or insidiously trying to work its way into your organization. And so I found that to be a really cool little bit on Tiamat as a religion in the Forgotten Realms. The Forgotten Realms has a very well-established pantheon of lots and lots of gods that are very well-known and used all the time, and Tiamat never shows up. In fact, in the Year of Rogue Dragons novel series, Tiamat was a non-player, which is odd to me that Tiamat would not be a player in that storyline, or at least in that novel series, when she does have a presence in the Forgotten Realms. Now, you read a little deeper and you get into some of the information in this book and you actually find out that Tiamat did have some things to do with that. So for those of you who want that full story, this book is actually going to give you some background information as to how all the things in the novels came to be and the role that Tiamat had to play in that. So, but in the novel series itself, it doesn't become clear that to what extent, I guess I should say, that Tiamat plays. And so that seems a little odd to me. But this section gives you some really cool information about Tiamat and her role in the Forgotten Realms, which really has me thinking, man, I need to run another game that's all about dragons or centered on dragons and have the characters be in the Southern Forgotten Realms, because there's some really cool stuff that I can pull out of here and make a really neat campaign out of. In any case, then the section finishes off with another little mini-adventure for, again, 4 to 6 players, this time 13th level, and this one involves taking on a Church of Tiamat. And it deals with a secret temple of Tiamat in Unther, in the catacombs underneath the most populous city of Unthalas. And so basically the idea here is that the characters eventually discover that there's a temple of Tiamat hidden under the city, and they find the secret entrance to it, and they have to work their way through this temple location, getting through the guardians and allies and members of the temple that dwell there, and eventually gets into this larger storyline of this temple is doing some odd experimentation and creating some new creatures that may be a little bit different. And this actually uses, in one instance, uses a new creature presented in this book called the Stone Glider. I should say the Blue Spawn Stone Gliders, which are some really neat sort of, I don't know, almost spider-like blue dragon things. Like if spiders mixed with blue dragons and created these things that could actually move through stone. That's what these creatures would be. And actually, there's some really beautiful artwork of an encounter with the Blue Spawn Stone Gliders, which also gives a bit of a hint into some of the things that they're going to encounter and find out later on as they get more and more into the story of what exactly this temple has been doing. The next chapter is called Orders of Dragonkind. And basically, in this chapter, you're getting information about different organizations and groups that deal with dragons. The first one is called the Blood of Morumi. Morumi? Oh, that's close enough. And basically, this is a group made up of made up of dragons and draconic hobgoblin descendants of this legendary blue dragon, Mormy, who ruled in an area that is currently the Silver Marchers. Way back when dragons ruled the world, right? And so this ancient blue dragon, legendary blue dragon, who ruled the area of the Silver Marchers, now is long gone, but its descendants are still around, and some of them and have this civilization of hobgoblins around them, all sort of connected to these dragons that live in this area, which I, again, found to be a really interesting idea, because the Silver Marches is not an area that you normally think of as dealing heavily with dragons in the Forgotten Realms. But here is some information as to how to integrate dragons into that part of the Forgotten Realms very cleanly, very easily, with one organization, and I found it to be very, very well written. The next one is the Church of Chazar, dealing with that ancient and super powerful Chosen of Tiamat Great Worm Red Dragon that's ruling Chasinta. Not only has he built up a country, he's actually also built a church dedicated to worshiping himself. And so it gives you some information about how the church came about and what some of their activities are and what they're all about. And so if you're, again, running a Chasentan or Southern Forgotten Realms campaign dealing with these dragon realms heavily, this is some interesting bits of information. There's another organization called the Confluence, and this is an organization based out of Waterdeep. And I didn't talk much about the whole Waterdeep situation with dragons, but it does give some information when you go through the information about the specific dragons about what's going on in Waterdeep. Waterdeep has a mythal around it that keeps out dragons, except there's a magic item that allows you to control and allow if certain dragons are going to be allowed in. And so there are some dragons there. The Confluence is a secret group in Waterdeep that hunts down shapechangers who are trying to establish themselves in the City of Splendors. And there are several half-steel dragons that sort of run this organization. And they have pretty strong connections to the merchants of the city. But there has been a history of shapechangers trying to infiltrate their way in. And so you have a group of relatively good aligned dragons living in Waterdeep that are trying to keep people out. And there's this whole sort of underlining organization of dragons organized by a few people, or a few dragons, I should say, that live there, trying to keep the dragon population secret from the general population of Waterdeep. So there are dragons in Waterdeep, just most people don't know about it. Then you have the organization called House Orgoth. Orgoth is a set of ruins in the eastern Highmoor, and it was established by ancient Netherese. Netheril, again, is an ancient empire of the Forgotten Realms. Powerful human wizards sort of were the thing there. And so what people don't realize is that the Netherese of the Orgoth clan mixed with dragons and are still living there. And so there's this secret ancient organization of draconic people, half-dragons and that kind of thing, living there. Except they also suffered from something called the Serpent Curse, which made them into Ophidians, which is a snake-like race, detailed further in another book called Serpent Kingdoms. And so you have all these draconic serpent snake people living in these ruins who used to be ancient, powerful human wizards. And you get all kinds of information about what they're all about. And so I could see some cool things coming out of this as far as an adventure of you run into some of them and then work your way into figuring out that there's more of them and that there's this whole organization and that they're not so insignificant. They've just sort of stayed hidden. In any case, without going too long, you then get into another organization called the Sisterhood of Asembra. And the Sisterhood of Asembra is a small group of half-song dragons that live in Battledale, and out in the forest of Battledale in the Dale Lands. And basically the idea is that there was a song dragon who had a series of children, and so you have these draconic half-song dragons living out in the woods of Battledale. And basically they've created sort of a safe haven for dragon-born or dragon-kind out in the woods, off alone. They actually had some protection against the recent Dragon Rage. But didn't give it to everybody, and so they've made some enemies that way, but they've also helped out some people, and they helped to rebuild Damara. They've actually sent people there to help with that kind of stuff, and so there's all kinds of places you might run into this organization of about 500 people, but it's a 500 people that are Dragonborn or half-dragon, and Dragonborn is something that we'll talk a little bit later on. Then you get into an organization called the Talons of Justice. This is a group that made an appearance, actually several fairly significant appearances in that novel series. The Talons of Justice is an order of silver dragons. They have a special code. They follow Bahamut, and basically they are a organization of silver dragons that work to bring justice to dragonkind. So if a dragon does something wrong against their code, against their order, then they go out and seek justice. And then you get into the next chapter called Dragon Lairs, and this one is all about different things that you might encounter or place in a dragon's lair. And this is a chapter that you're largely going to be able to use no matter what setting you're using. So this is a section where you're really going to be able to pull some stuff out if you're a DM not running in the Forgotten Realms. Now, I don't know if this section is going to make it worth the price for you if you're not running a Forgotten Realms game. But in any case, you have a series of traps, right? Like the Baleful Polymorph trap, a trap that will polymorph the character into something harmless, you know, a toad or a lizard or something that's not going to hurt the dragon. There's the Fiery Death trap, which is an insidious little trap because it specifically is connected to two spells, both Flame Strike and Death Watch. And so what it does is it watches and waits. The trap just sits dormant, doesn't do anything until it senses a creature coming nearby that's weak, until it notices that there's somebody nearby that has 3 or less hit points. And when it notices that, it targets that creature with a Flame Strike spell. So this is a spell, or a trap, I should say, very specifically designed to kill things, something off. It's meant to be a killing blow. Don't let him heal. Don't let him recover. Knock him out right now and make sure they don't come back. So that's a sample of some of the CR6 traps. There's also CR7 traps, like the Twin Shadow Guards doorknob trap. And basically you have 2 half-shadow dragon guards flanking the doors, and when the knob is turned, the right statue's head bites the hand on the knob, and if it succeeds, the target has to save against poison, and then it's automatically reset. So it's more or less just a poison trap, except you don't know which side it's coming from. There's also CR8 traps. An example of a CR8 trap is the Facade of Shadow Essence Darts. Once again, utilized by Shadow Dragons, as it basically hits them with a poison dart that drains them of strength, the idea being that Shadow Dragons would use this to weaken and soften up an enemy and drain them of their power before it got to them, and then they could drain them further. There's a CR9 trap. There's a couple CR9 traps. An example of that would be the White Dragon Cone of Cold trap, which is basically 2 white dragon heads that face each other in a wall or a tunnel or what have you, and when a good aligned character passes between them, it emits a cone of cold, and it resets after 1 day 4 rounds, and then it can do it again and again and again and again. But each head does it, and so one head might recharge in 1 round and one head might recharge in 4 rounds, and you just don't know when you can expect another blast of a cone of cold, and so you get sort of this dual cone of cold effect. And then there's also a couple of CR10 traps. And the example I'll give you from this is the imprisonment trap. Usually this is used by dragons, I would suspect, to keep people from coming in and stealing their hoard. You put it on a gem or another bit of treasure. When a character picks up that item, it transports them to a prison way, way down in the earth, just like an imprisonment spell would. And then the item disappears. You also have layer hazards listed in this section, such as the chlorine haze. If you've got a black or a green dragon that breathes acid, they might have a confined area of their lair, and so there's this haze of acidic chlorine floating constantly through their dungeon, giving different effects to people that wander in. And as another example, there's also something called shadow slime, which is sort of a green slime that's been corrupted by shadow dragons. And it falls off of walls and ceilings whenever it detects movement, and it sucks the life energy out of people. Instead of the normal green slime thing, it starts sucking out life. And also puts out illumination. And then you get into some new dragon-related creatures. There's the dragon blood subtype that is new, and so they sort of explain what the dragon blood subtype is. They start using some of that. And then they actually get into the creatures, like the blue spawn stone glider that I told you about earlier. There's something called the Krathbairn, a CR7 fishy sort of aquatic-looking creature. It's sort of like a gargoyle, but instead of wings, it has sort of these fish-like fin things coming off of its arms, and it's got these claw things. And you can run into them in Unthalas. They show up in the Altar of Scales adventure. You've got the Red Spawn Birther, which is sort of a dinosaur slash red dragon, and it's unique and interesting because it creates other creatures. Depending on what it eats, it swallows things, and then after it swallows things, it gives birth to new, odd combinations of creatures. So you could have it swallow a couple different things, and then it births out all kinds of crazy combinations. There's the spectral creature template. So you can create a spectral dragon. And then you get into the next section, which is dragon-related spells. You get all kinds of new spells here, such as Abate Dragon Rage, or Draco Rage. The idea being that every now and then in the Forgotten Realms, a rage comes on. The Abate Draco Rage spell is a 4th level spell that allows you to, for at least a few days, negate that rage in dragons, calm them down. Or the Aggravate Draco Rage, another 4th level spell, that allows you to make it worse. There are also spells to help you fight dragons, like Diminish Breath Weapon, where you actually start taking away dice from a dragon's breath weapon that lasts for 10 minutes per level. It's a 4th level spell for bards and sorcerer wizards. And so it's a good thing to have on hand if you're going to be fighting dragons, right? Keep them from having a powerful breath weapon. Another example from this book of a new spell is... oh, let's talk about Scattergloom. Scattergloom is a 3rd level evocation sorcerer wizard spell. And what this spell does is it creates 4 cylinders of magical darkness, which move around the room. And so you've got these cylinders of magical darkness flying around and engulfing certain things and giving them concealment that lasts for several, you know, 1 round per level. But then it also attaches itself to its targets, right? So if you're encompassed by this cylinder of shadow, then you can't leave. You're stuck in it, and so you can't see anything that you're attacking, and nothing can see you to come and help you and that kind of thing. And so it's sort of a more powerful version of a darkness spell, except that you get 4 of them, and they follow the target. And then it gets into some of the things that tie it more into the novels and the recent events, and that's the epic spells. You get some new epic spells for those of you who have epic things, such as the Dragon Ward Mythal that's over Waterdeep. It gives you the spell information for that. It gives you the spell information for the Draco Rage Mythal that created the whole Dragon Rage, and the King Killer Shield, a shield that you can make that protects dragons from the Draco Rage Mythal. And then you get into magic items. You get some new weapons, like the Dragon Tooth of Lareth. Lareth was the previous king of the gold dragons and king of the good dragons in general, who died during the recent novel series, and they apparently turned his teeth into some very important weapons. Now, this obviously wouldn't be something that's given out to just anybody, because you're giving away the body part of somebody who is very, very important to you. You also have the Silver Sickles of Soranth, the Sword of Dragon Blood. And so those are your three new magic weapons. So if you want to incorporate some new dragon-based magic weapons into your game, here are some neat things that you might incorporate. Other magic items include the Amber Acorns of the Moonwood Circle, which basically allows you to summon elementals, but it's specifically targeted for divine casters. So using the Summon Nature's Ally type spell, it allows you to summon elementals to come to your aid. There's the Crown of the Death Dragon, created by priests of Tiamat who were also members of the Cult of the Dragon, which is an odd combination because that group, sometimes they get along and sometimes they don't. And it has all kinds of different effects. There's the Crown of the North Wind. There's the Crown Ring of Chazar, which is the main bit of regalia to the Royal Throne of Jacinta. There's only one in existence, although there could be more made, obviously. Basically, it just summons and commands Red Abishai, which are dragon-based demon creatures. There's the Dragon Blight Bomb. There's the Dragon Dowsing Rod. There's the Dragon Draught, the Dragon Skull Talisman, the Dragon Spectre Flute, all kinds of new things. The Idol of Apostasy. The Ring of Draconic Deception that allows a dragon to look like a different kind of dragon. There's the Ring of Dragons that allows you to communicate with any dragons, telepathically or verbally, and also allows you to create illusions of dragons and call to a specific dragon if you know the name of that dragon. You can call to them if you need to send them a message or if you're in trouble or what have you. There's the Rods of the Dark Lady, connected to Tiamat. There's the Scalebane Bottle. There's the Scepter of Simbar. There's the Stone of Aerial Alarm. And those are the normal sort of items. Then you get into the minor artifacts, and you've got a series of minor artifacts that are also important, like Chisabra's Pendant, which allows you regeneration, Dimension Door, Disguise Self, Fairy Fire. It affects the wearer with Sea Invisibility, Feather Fall, and Immunity to Magic Missile. Then there's the Diamond Scepter of Chamiela, the Helm of Supreme Wizardry. Then major artifacts like the Feigned Shield of Shik-Korort, Gazir's The Desert's Edge, Kaias the Kraken Scourge, Kurltar the Demon Shield, the Monocle of Bagthalos, the Staff of Shun, which is connected to the Empire of Shun that I mentioned earlier. Several of these don't really have anything to do with dragons, except for the fact that they were mentioned previously in the book as being in the hordes of some of the more powerful dragons. And so that's why I'm sort of flying through them quickly. They're not necessarily dragon-based, as they are being held by dragons at the time. Some of them, like the Staff of Shun, do have some history with dragons specifically. And then you get into the last section, new dragons. And this gives you new stats for different kinds of dragons. You have the Mercury Dragon, which is a fire-based dragon that is chaotic good. So you have the Silvery Fire-based Chaotic Good Dragon. You've got the Steel Dragons, which are air-based. And they are usually lawful neutral, but sometimes lawful good. So you have some variability there. You've got the Mist Dragons, which are water dragons that are neutral in the Forgotten Realms. And then you get into the appendix. And the appendix is very, very interesting. And you can actually download the appendix from the Wizard's website. And then you get a sortable database spreadsheet, I guess, of this list. But the appendix is basically just one big chart of all of the named dragons in the Forgotten Realms. Some of them alive, some of them dead, some of them Dracoliches. So you get the name of the dragon, you get the CR, you get their status, living, dead, Dracolich, what have you. You get their gender and their kind, you get the location of their lair and or their domain, where they're at. And so you just have this, so you get probably 10 to 12 pages here of just this huge list of all the named dragons in the Forgotten Realms. So even if there's not one that's not mentioned, you've got some backup here. If you read about one in a novel, that probably shows up here. So you get some more information about how old they are, if they have levels and something, that kind of stuff. And so it's really kind of cool as far as just taking the time to sit there and absorb a chart. Now, This review went started off very, very quickly, but ended up taking a little bit longer than I expected, just like getting it out to you guys did. So that's where the book ends, and that's where I will stop talking about it. All in all, I found it to be a good book, if you can get through the long list of dragon after dragon after dragon after dragon after dragon. There's a lot of that stuff. I almost feel like I wish there was a better way to do that. Like, I want that information, but I want to be able to say, well, I need a dragon in Northern Forgotten Realms that's around this CR. And I wish there was a way to be able to sort of have a searchable index of those dragons with that information. But that said, there is still some really cool, fun information in there. It is just, it does just get a little bit tedious going through it. Now, as a book, it is hardcover. It is 158 pages. It comes off a little thin for a hardcover book. I honestly sort of wish that Wizards of the Coast would start printing some of these thinner books in softcover instead of hardcover. I know that their studies and research have shown that hardcovers sell better, but honestly, it drives the price up a little bit, and I'm not sure that it's always worth it. The cover price on this book is $29.95. If I am running a Forgotten Realms game with dragons in it, I would say it's worth $25. No, I would say, I take that back. I would say it's worth the $30 that it costs. If you're running a Forgotten Realms game and you want to incorporate dragons. If you want to incorporate more recent events, I would say it's worth $30. If you're just running a Forgotten Realms game and you don't want and you don't have specific goals to bring in more current events or more dragons in your game, I would say it's worth $20. If you're not running a Forgotten Realms game at all, I would say this book is worth, for reading value and for new items and creatures and that kind of stuff, I would say it's probably worth $10. So that is Dragons of Faerun. As always, I urge and welcome listeners to help the show in any way you can. One of the best ways is to participate. Send in your emails or audio comments to thetomeshow@gmail.com or let me know if you're interested in reporting for the show regularly. You can also instant message me, join the Tome Yahoo group, or leave an audio, or call the Tome hotline. You can dig the show at dig.com, vote for us at Podcast Alley, or leave an iTunes review. All of these things help the show get noticed, and I really appreciate that. Most of these things can be found at the website at www.thetomeshow.com. This has been episode 24, Dragons of Faerun of
The Tome.